In 2023, the A24 film The Iron Claw was released in theaters to critical acclaim. It told the story of the real-life wrestling dynasty, the Von Erichs, who are known for their distinctive finishing move, the Iron Claw.
It's the Iron Claw! Gary Von Erich with that patented, unique Von Erich Iron Claw. No one else can do it like the Von Erichs and Flair.
The Iron Claw consisted of a Von Erich holding their hand high, fingers tensed and curled like a claw, clamping it on his opponent's face and gouging it. Well, pretending to gouge it. Back when the Von Erichs were big, wrestling was known for kayfabe culture. Much like with the Harlem Globetrotters, kayfabe culture consists of presenting stage performances as genuine or authentic. To help sell the story, wrestlers engaged in blading, actually cutting themselves during a match to make it look like their opponents had made them bleed.
And there's the claw being applied to the forehead of Michael Hayes. That could very well draw the blood that could end this match. Kevin Von Erich on Michael Hayes, referee checking. What does he see? A spot of crimson? Is it going to happen? Yes, it does!
Now, everyone knows that professional wrestling is fake, with wrestlers in the crowd embracing the artificiality of it all. And so, a new generation looks askance at their parents and grandparents, wondering how they fell for the shell game of kayfabe culture. The Amanda Lewis trial had its own version of the Iron Claw, with the state claiming that her own claw caused a family tragedy on par with a supposed curse that killed the Von Erichs. But now, we can look back and wonder how the jurors ever believed the snake oil the state was selling. Because the Iron Claw in the Amanda Lewis case wasn't created by a professional wrestler or a professional pathologist. Instead, it was invented by someone without any medical training or even a college degree.
Hi, and welcome to Undisclosed, Toward Justice, The State versus Amanda Lewis. I'm Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and author, and I'm here with my colleague, Colin Miller.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm a professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog. This is the fourth episode in our deep dive series into the wrongful conviction of Amanda Lewis, who was convicted of the drowning death of her daughter Adriana back in 2008.
Let's start today's episode by taking you back to the afternoon of August 7th, 2007. Hours after finding his sister, Adriana, drowning in the family pool, 6-year-old A.J. Hutto was subjected to a police interrogation at 5:05 p.m. During that interrogation, A.J. demonstrated for the police officers how he says his mom dunked his sister in the inflatable pool.
Adriana was playing like this, and Mom holding her hand on her ear so she won't scream.
While you can't see it, when AJ's voice gets muffled, that's because he's placed his left hand over his face and mouth. In other words, AJ was saying that his mom put her hand on the front of Adriana's face and dunked her in the family pool. This then takes us to some of the medical evidence used to support AJ's story. On the morning of August 10, 2007, an autopsy was performed on Adriana Hutto at the 14th Judicial Circuit Medical Examiner's Office in Panama City. The autopsy was performed by medical examiner Dr. Charles Siebert, Jr. For reasons that we'll discuss in a future episode, he no longer held that position in 2008 and was not called by the state to testify at Amanda's trial. Dr. Siebert was assisted in the autopsy by Lisa Ruckman, who also no longer worked for the medical examiner's office at the time of trial, but did testify.
Ms. Ruckman, did you used to work for the medical examiner's office?
That's correct.
In what capacity?
For 6.5 years, I was employed with the office. After the first 2 years, I was promoted to director of investigations, and I retained that position until January the 8th of this year.
According to Ruckman, here were her duties at the medical examiner's office.
As an investigator or director of investigations for the medical examiner's office, what were your duties on a day-to-day basis, ma'am?
They consisted of scene investigations, death investigations in the office, forensic photography, fingerprinting, assisting in identification, assisting in autopsies, reviewing medical records, working with families. Signing in
your training and experience that qualified you for that position?
Correct.
But on cross-examination, defense counsel questioned whether Ruckman really had the training necessary to do her job.
Ms. Ruckman, are you a medical doctor?
No, sir.
You have any medical training whatsoever?
No, formally, no, sir.
Ever been to an EMT school where they teach how to be an emergency medical technician?
No, sir.
Do you have a college degree?
No, sir.
So yeah, someone without medical training or a college degree assisting in autopsies and reviewing medical records seems less than ideal. It would be like being treated by a doctor, assisted by a candy striper instead of a nurse. So what did Ruckman see when she assisted in the autopsy of Adriana? Here was her testimony at trial.
Tell us what you observed.
There were several bruises across the forehead and one to her left cheek. There were, I believe, two bruises on her chest and one on her shoulder. Those were visible. Well, the shoulder wasn't, but the other were visible even with the hospital gown on.
When shown an autopsy photo on the witness stand, Ruckman then went into more detail on the bruises she saw on Adriana's face.
Would you point out the injuries that you noticed first when you started to assist in this autopsy?
The most significant were the two on the midline of the forehead, obviously, as well, this bruising to this area. Also noted are two smaller bruises to the right side of the forehead over here, and there's a bruise also on the left cheek that I described that was apparent.
And as Ruckman took a closer look at the bruises during the autopsy, she came up with and tested a hypothesis.
Now, Ms. Ruckman, these bruises, what would you call these injuries, ma'am?
Through my experience, initially, we didn't have any information. I personally didn't have any information, and from my experience, it did look consistent to be that of a left hand.
Okay. Did you do anything during this process where these photographs were being made to either confirm or deny that, ma'am?
I did. To test my original hypothesis that it was a handprint, I placed my hand over the bruises, and as you can see on the side of the cheek here, it lined up perfectly with the side of my left thumb. This would be the index finger where it lined up, my middle finger, ring finger, and then either one of these two smaller bruises matched where my pinky would be. And the ball of my hand was consistent with that. The mark that was on the bridge of the nose, it did seem to fit.
It's hard to convey just how crazy this is. Here, we have a witness with no medical training, offering her supposed expert opinion that the bruises on Adriana's face were caused by a left hand. Needless to say, the state did not qualify Ruckman as an expert witness, nor would she have satisfied the standard in any state. Understandably, defense counsel Walter Smith objected to this line of questioning, resulting in the following.
Witness is anything close to an expert. I haven't heard any of her credentials to even identify what a bruise is, much less that it came from a human hand.
If I could just back up a little. Ma'am, you cannot say definitively that a hand caused this, can you, ma'am?
No.
Yeah, because you were not there.
Exactly.
And it would depend on the shape or size, the size of the hand and the location of the hand.
Right. Well, I object. She could even call it a bruise. We've got doctors that come in and identify bruises. How can she doesn't have the expertise to call her bruise?
Okay, the objection was overruled.
Could you repeat your question, please?
You cannot say definitively that it was one hand or any particular hand, because that would depend on the size of the hand and what the position of the hand on the face. Is that correct?
Certainly, only that it was consistent or not consistent.
Okay, thank you.
A few thoughts about this. First, for those of you who watched the Karen Reed trial, you know how nuts it was for the judge to overrule this objection. In the Karen Reed case, the defense had to fight tooth and nail to have highly qualified experts testify that injuries in the victim's arm could have been caused by dog bites. And while the judge probably set the bar too high in that case, She was correct that only highly specialized experts can testify to this type of pattern recognition. And even when they can only say that the injuries are, quote, consistent with whatever the alleged source was. And so, when prosecutor Larry Basford said he was scaling back his questioning of Ruckman, he was really solely asking questions that a highly skilled expert could answer. Second, as Ruckman acknowledged, all she was saying was that her hand lined up with the bruises on Adriana's face. Why would that tell us anything about whether Amanda's hand would line up as well? At trial, the defense called Dr. Edward Willey, a pathologist, to testify. Unfortunately, he testified remotely, so the audio isn't great, but here's what he initially said when prosecutor Larry Basford broached the subject.
Dr. Willey, did you know that during the autopsy that one of Dr. Siebert's assistants actually placed her hand, her left hand, over these bruises, and there would seem to be a match of those? Were you aware of that, sir?
I don't believe I've ever had that kind of manifestation before. On the other hand, I think there's no reason to think that she's responsible for producing the bruises just because they had to fit her.
In case you couldn't hear, this who's on first back and forth had Dr. Willey initially thinking that Larry Basford was saying that Lisa Ruckman could have caused the bruises on Adriana's face. And that interpretation makes some sense because that's all our experiment could tell us, if it could tell us anything at all. Because hand sizes differ drastically across people. And while it's not always the case, there's a strong correlation between height and hand size. As noted in a prior episode, Amanda Lewis is about 5'9" tall. From the video of trial, Ruckman looks at least half a foot shorter. Finally, a third thought in this. In 2016, the President's Council of Advisors in Science and Technology issued a report that found fatal flaws with feature mark comparison. We're talking about things like whether a particular set of sneakers could have left muddy shoe prints at the crime scene, or whether the defendant's teeth could have caused bite marks in the victim's arm. The report concluded there's been no adherence to the scientific method in such cases, even when experts use the defendant's actual shoes or a mold of the defendant's actual teeth.
This had been the dirty little secret of forensic science for years, and it's one that Dr. Willey addressed once Larry Basford clarified what he was claiming.
No, sir, I'm talking about after the fact, when they observed the bruises, that this was after death, that they commented how it was consistent with a hand, and her hand was placed over there, and it actually matched up with those bruises. I was asking if you were aware of that.
Comparisons like that are generally not very reliable. For example, bite mark comparisons and things like that. So I think I could probably put my hand to my satisfaction to indicate that some of them are consistent. I've got small hands for an adult male, so they could be pretty spry hand, the question.
Again, the audio here isn't great, but Dr. Willey was saying that these feature mark comparisons have basically no value and analogized what was done here to bite mark comparisons, which are now largely derided as junk science. When cross-examining Lisa Ruckman, defense counsel delved into the complete absence of any scientific method with what she did.
Have you done any studies about how human hands cause injuries to faces?
No.
Have you read any medical literature about it?
No.
Do you know how much pressure is required to cause a bruise on a face by a human hand?
Not by a human hand, no, sir.
Well, demonstrate on your face exactly how you think those injuries occurred.
Well, it differs because certainly my face is a different size than hers.
Just put your hand on your face. I want you to press your face hard enough so you can make those bruises out there.
I don't think that I could do that to myself.
I don't think you could either. Thank you.
Two thoughts about this before we get to the core issue Walter Smith teed up with this line of questioning. First, you can't see it, but Lisa Ruckman complied with Smith's request to put her hand up to her face to show how she lined it up with the bruises on Adriana's face. But here's the thing. When she did so, she put the palm of her hand over her mouth. If you watch the video of AJ's police interrogation, when he demonstrates what he says his mom did, he places his palm at the bottom of his chin. What this means is that if we're basing our theory on what AJ demonstrated, Lisa Ruckman's reenactment does not line up. This takes us to a second issue, which is whether we should base our theory on what AJ demonstrated during his police interrogation. This is certainly what Prosecutor Larry Basford wanted the jury to do. Here's what he argued to the jury toward the end of rebuttal closing.
At 5:05, Dr. Fox pronounced Adriana dead. And at 5:09, AJ starts giving a statement describing the method his mother drowned his sister. And then they go down there and find it. Is that just a coincidence? 60 miles away from here, down in Panama City, how did that little boy know there were going to be bruises down there to corroborate what he was telling the officers?
But here's the threshold question. Just because AJ put his left hand to his face, does that mean that he was saying his mom used her left hand to dunk his sister? Because that's the only way this theory could possibly work. The bruises on Adriana's face only line up with the left hand. The state's theory was that the dense vertical line bruises on Adriana's forehead were from Amanda's fingers, and that the bruise on her left cheek was from Amanda's left thumb. If Amanda did this with her right hand, it couldn't and wouldn't have left the bruise pattern on Adriana's face. Now, at this very moment, you're probably wondering the same thing that we were. What is Amanda's dominant hand? Well, at the very close of the defense case, counsel pulled what we'll call the Princess Bride defense. You probably know the scene we're talking about. Inigo Montoya is fencing Wesley when it looks like the latter has the upper hand. But then...
I admitted you are better than I am.
Then why are you smiling?
Because I know something you don't know.
And what is that?
I am not left-handed.
Well, at the very end of trial, after Lisa Ruckman had testified, defense counsel called Amanda to the stand for one final question.
Lewis, I neglected to ask you yesterday. I just have one question for you. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
I'm right-handed.
Thank you.
That, though, still leaves the issue of AJ reenacting the drowning with his left hand. But if you have an amazing memory, you might remember that we told you something else at episode one. Specifically, AJ drew the drowning from mental health therapist Lynette Hornsby. At trial, no one noted something specific about the drawing, but we did discuss it in that first episode. In this drawing, Amanda is drowning Adriana with her right hand. And not only is she using her right hand in the drawing, but AJ drew an arrow pointing to Amanda's right arm with the words, "My mom's arm." Now, you might wonder, if a child is a reenactment and a drawing of what they saw their parent doing with their hand, which should we trust more? Specifically, in this case, does the reenactment mean AJ remembered or imagined his mom using her left hand to drown Adriana? Or does the drawing demonstrate that this memory or make-believe involved his mom using her right hand?
I reached out to two experts in this very question. The first was an expert in the development of handedness in children. She responded off the record as follows regarding research into children reenacting what they've seen a model do.
Even when children imitate a hand use immediately after the model, they show a great deal of variability in whether they use the same hand or not. When we add memory into the equation, it seems likely that there would be even more variability. Drawing adds another whole layer to the complications, since children's drawings and perspective taking in drawing would still be in flux at the child's age. In sum, I personally would read absolutely nothing into the hand choice.
Second, I spoke to Dr. J. Zoe Klemfis, an expert in child competency. You'll hear more from her in a later episode, but here's what she said on the subject.
Are you aware of any work about whether the reenactment or the drawing would be more accurate, or is that not something that's been researched?
It is. Okay. In general, the problem is those activities, going back to sort of the stories thing, is those activities kind of encourage fantasy or exploration for kids, and so they're not typically reliable pieces of evidence. So I would typically not encourage those as pieces of factual evidence.
Yeah. The clear message from both of these experts is that we shouldn't put much stock in AJ's choice of hand in either the reenactment or the drawing. And that leaves us with studies on the use of your dominant hand in daily tasks. The data shows this happens about 70% of the time. Therefore, given that Amanda is right-handed, it seems unlikely that she would have drowned her daughter with her non-dominant left hand. And again, the bruise pattern is only evidence of Amanda's guilt if she drowned Adriana with her left hand.
For the dark hours when you dare not close your eyes, it's the No Sleep Podcast. The multi-award-winning anthology series of original horror stories is now in its 15th year. Join us for tales that will frighten you and make your nights horrifyingly sleepless. The No Sleep Podcast is the preeminent horror fiction podcast with over 1,000 hours of creepy tales in our archives. Along with its regular cast of talented voice actors, it has featured the voice talents of Elijah Wood, Dan Harmon, and Kate Siegel. Immerse yourself in horror that takes theater of the mind to the place where your nightmares reside. Find us on every podcast platform and visit thenosleeppodcast.com to learn more. But be sure to brace yourself for the No Sleep Podcast.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Hi everybody, Rabia here. I am so excited to tell you, if you haven't heard yet, that Undisclosed finally has a Patreon. Our Patreon is where you will find all kinds of perks like ad-free episodes, a bonus episode every month where Colin and I answer all your questions, and also you're going to find perks like early access to our limited merch drops, which are going to start happening twice a year, as well as the ability to get on a Zoom call with me once a month, face-to-face, to live discuss any true crime case that you guys are obsessed with and really want to go through. And I love having a place to talk about that stuff because I need people to talk about it with. But if you're not in it for the perks and you're in it for the justice and you just want to support our work, I would really ask you to please sign up for the dollar a month tier. And the perk there is just good karma and warm fuzzies and being in the fight for justice for these defendants, because if everybody chips in a dollar a month, our work can be funded for another decade to come. So check out the Undisclosed Patreon by going to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Again, it's patreon.com/undisclosedpod. And I hope to see you all there. Thank you for supporting our work for a decade, and please stay with us so we can do this for years to come.
All this takes us back to defense counsel's cross-examination of Lisa Ruckman regarding whether she or someone similar could cause bruising to a face with her hands. I decided to approach the question from two fronts. The first was to contact experts regarding the amount of downward force someone could exert with their arm and hand. To again set the scene, Amanda is about 5'9" tall. The side of the pool was 4 feet high. And based upon the state's theory and AJ's drawing, Amanda was standing outside the pool and Adriana was fully in the pool, with Amanda extending her arm into the pool and pushing Adriana's face under water that was between 32 and 35.5 inches deep. Now, the first thing to consider here is again that the state claimed that Amanda used her non-dominant left hand to dunk Adriana. And so, I reached out to Drs. Nicholas J. LaDelfa and Ryan Foley of the Department of Kinesthesiology at Ontario Tech University, because they had recently done a meta-analysis of upper limb strength asymmetry. Initially, here's what Dr. Foley had to say about what's known as the 10% rule.
In this meta-analysis you do, you're looking at this so-called 10% rule. And so could you sort of let me know in layman's terms what this 10% rule is saying as a rule of thumb?
Yeah. So yeah, the 10% rule is sort of this heuristic that has been applied to grip force in particular, but multiple exertions of the upper limb, sometimes non-discriminately, stating that the dominant limb is 10% stronger than the non-dominant limb. That's sort of how it's been reported in the literature originally. And then for close to almost a century, basically papers have either cited or tried to prove or disprove this 10% rule, sort of on a study-by-study basis.
And here were the results of the meta-analysis.
And in terms of looking at this, you, as you note in the piece, have done this meta-analysis. And what were the results you found from this meta-analysis?
Yeah, the results we found were that across many different types of exertions, such as grip force, manual arm strength exertions, so pressing on like an end effector, think if you're like pushing with your hand against something with your whole arm, or individual joint strengths like a wrist flexion or an elbow flexion or extension, the 10% rule is a fairly good generalization, but there can be discrepancies in that, such as, you know, the dominant shoulder seems to be more lateralized, sort of greater than the 10% rule, and then other exertions seem to be a bit less than the 10% rule.
Beyond confirming this rough 10% rule, the meta-analysis also found increased lateralization in women versus men. In other words, putting it more simply, there's a bit more than a 10% difference in force when women use their non-dominant hand versus their dominant hand to exert downward force.
And as part of the meta-analysis, you look at these studies, and some of them broke down by sex, men versus women. And what did you find in terms of women versus men in these studies?
In general, women seem to be more lateralized towards the dominant limb, particularly with respect to the shoulder. There was a smaller sample size, obviously, than the entire study that reported sex-by-sex differences and individual sort of like, let's call it raw, their means, but raw data between dominant and non-dominant. So now you're relying on studies to break down by four so that the sample size gets a bit smaller, but in general, women seem to be more lateralized towards the dominant limb.
In terms of why this science is important in a practical sense, here's Dr. LaDelfa.
In the world of ergonomics and product design, it can be fairly important to understand what are the strength capabilities on one side compared to the other, right? So generally, the world has kind of, you know, we're 90% right-handed in the population for the most part on average. So generally, things have been designed for a right-hand world and right-handed capabilities. So that's kind of the way that we see this data being applied, right? So now we can understand, well, if we're designing for, let's say, to open a pickle jar, right, and that requires a torque of, let's say, 20 newton meters or pound inches of force. Now, if that were to be done with the non-dominant hand, you would have to reduce that by about 10%.
Of course, for our case, this research is important on the issue of the amount of force Amanda could have applied if she were pushing Adriana's face underwater. And now we have a solid starting point. Again, for Adriana's bruising to help the state's case, Amanda would have needed to use her non-dominant left hand. Therefore, as a baseline, Amanda could produce about 10 to 11% less force with her left hand than her right hand. Next, let's look at the pool's layout and how far Amanda would have needed to extend her arm to drown Adriana. About a month or so after Adriana drowned, defense counsel came to the trailer to meet with Amanda's boyfriend, Alan Carnley, and Charles Corcoran, the chief of the fire department and first responder on the day of the drowning.
What happened to the swimming pool between the time Adriana drowned and the time that I got in contact with?
It was removed.
You took it down?
Yes, sir. A deputy told me I could.
Okay. And did I ask you to put it back up?
Yes, sir, you did.
Did you try to put it right in the same spot?
In the same spot, and the grass was dead where the tarp went. We put it on the exact same spot where it was. Yes, sir.
Now, as we've noted, after Adriana was pulled from the pool, the water measured at 32 inches deep on one side and 35 and a half inches on the other side. And that's because the pool was not on totally level ground.
And is this corner higher than the other corner?
That's correct. The right side was higher, yes.
Why is that?
Around them, but
Okay, because it's just unlevel ground.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the frequently asked questions section for the pool, here's the following Q&A.
Question, what is the steepest slope that I am able to set up my pool on? Answer, the surface must be perfectly flat, solid, and level. Pay close attention to the pool's stability and levelness in the early stages of filling your pool up with water. If after about an inch of water is accumulated and the water is not spreading out evenly, or the pool appears to be bulging to one side, stop filling the pool, drain the water, and select a new level site. If the pool is set up on a slope, the pool will be lopsided and can collapse, causing personal injury or property damage.
This is exactly what happened with the pool at the trailer. As a result of the pool not being on totally level ground, its side bulged out quite a bit. And what that meant was that Amanda or anyone could not simply just stand next to the pool and reach their arm in to drown somebody. Instead, they would need to lean over and fully extend their arm just to reach the face of someone in the pool.
Now, this is Defendants 2H. And what are you doing here?
I'm just leaning up to the pool, see how high up the pool is.
Okay. Now, the pool seems to bulge out quite a bit at the bottom.
Yeah.
So if you're leaning into the pool, your legs are quite a bit further out from the ring of the pool.
That's correct, yes.
How far can you get your hand down in the water there when you're doing that?
Not very far without you being tilted over into the water.
Okay. So you have to lean at quite an angle in order to get your arm into the water of the pool.
That's correct.
Are you, who's taller, you or Amanda Lewis? Or are you about the same?
I don't believe you're about the same. I'm not really sure.
So, turning back to the experts, from an ergonomic perspective, what does this mean about the amount of downward force Amanda could exert with her arm fully extended? Again, here's Dr. LaDelfa.
So I did a little more of a deep dive into anthropometric data, which is kind of looking at dimensions of humans for different percentiles of the population. So, I looked at a 5'9" female, and of course, everyone has different proportions. Even though you're 5'9", people have different arm lengths. But on average, a 5'9" female has an arm length of about 30 inches or so, from shoulder to fingertip. So we kind of used that in these strength models to have a look. And we saw that if you have your hand about 8 inches out in front of the body and then extend it out to about 30 inches out in front of the body, which would be kind of your maximum arm reach for a 5'9" female, the strength drops by about 32%.
And if you think about it, this makes sense if you use the analogy of holding something like a dumbbell close to your body or further away.
And this can be explained by kind of simple biomechanics, right? As your hand extends forward from closer to the body to further away from your body, that lever arm gets a little bit longer, right? So you actually get a little bit weaker as your hand goes forward. And kind of a good analogy for this is imagine holding a good like 20-pound dumbbell, right? If you hold it close to your body, you know, it feels kind of light, but if you were to hold that same dumbbell and extend your arm further and further away from your body, it feels heavier and heavier, right? It gets harder to hold up. That's not because the dumbbell gets any less lighter, right? It's the same mass, but it's just getting further away from your body. You're getting weaker as it moves further away from your body. So it's that sort of principle that explains why as you're reaching forward, your strength goes down.
But beyond this, think again about the geometry of the pool. Its side was 48 inches high, but the water level was only between 32 and 35 and a half inches. And what this means is that with the pool bulging, Amanda would have needed to be at full extension to reach Adriana's face and then would have needed to extend her arm extra to dunk it under the water.
It's a process that's probably familiar to you, albeit under very different circumstances. Stretching your arm up those extra few inches to reach something from the top cabinet in the kitchen, or stretching your arm down that extra bit to reach something you've dropped behind the couch. We'll call this the Harrison Ford scenario, from the scene in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, in which his character tries to reach down those extra few inches to grab the Holy Grail.
Junior, give me your other hand. I can't hold on.
I can get it. I can almost reach it, Dad.
Indiana? Let it go.
It turns out that the experts have studied this Harrison Ford scenario. Specifically, a situation in which someone rotates their scapula, their shoulder blade, to try to extend their arm those extra couple of inches.
Yeah, so this is kind of an interesting thing. We do have the maximum reach with the hand forward, right? And that's kind of that number that I quoted you where it dropped around 32%. But you can actually stretch your arm forward a little more by rotating your scapula. We've all kind of experienced that where you reach into a cupboard to get a glass and it's just out of reach. So you just kind of twist your scapula a little bit just to get those extra couple inches. So when you do that, you can get an extra 2 or 3 inches if the hand is out in front of the body. And that would decrease the strength another 4%. So compared to with the hand close to the body, now that would be a 36% decrease in strength. Yeah. And so it just continues to decrease that strength the further that hand gets from the body.
So breaking this all down, first, if Amanda dunked Adriana with her non-dominant left hand, she would have had a 10 to 11% downward force deficit versus if she had used her dominant right hand. Second, if Amanda had her arm fully extended, as Alan showed in his demonstration, she would have been able to exert 32% less downward force than if she were pushing down on something right in front of her. And third, if Amanda had to rotate her scapula to reach out far enough into the pool and then push Adriana's face down under the water, she'd have 36% less downward force.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.
And then there's two final things, which we noted before. This was a soft-sided pool that was bulging at the bottom. Therefore, rather than standing straight and having her feet planted on the ground to generate power, Amanda would have needed to lean forward at an angle. And rather than being able to brace against a hard edge to generate force, if Amanda leaned against the pool, well, here's how her boyfriend Alan Carnley testified at trial.
Now, in 2B, what is this a picture of?
That's the warning.
That's the warning on the side of the pool. Can you read what it says about right here? Beginning with that, it says never allow.
Never allow diving and do thought of never lean, straddle, or exert pressure on playable ring.
Okay. And why was that warning there? Do you know why you can't straddle the pool or okay. put pressure on it?
For that top cable.
Now this is 2J. And who was that in the swim? Who was that standing by the swimming pool?
That would be me.
Okay. And what are you doing here?
I'm applying pressure to the ring.
How much pressure do you have to put on it to get it to deflate like that?
It wasn't very much. Okay. Very much pressure at all.
Would the weight of a child be able to depress it that much?
Yeah.
So two thoughts on this. First, this lines up with the theory that Adriana was leaning over the pool from the wagon when the top caved in and she fell into the pool. Again, you might recall that this was first responder Charles Corcoran's conclusion when he first arrived in the scene.
In the photos of the pool, you see a wagon and you see a bicycle. It was my assumption at that point that the child was up on either of those two toys. That type of a pool has no resistance when you put weight on it. It's water supported. My assumption was she went over the side of the pool, went down, hit her head, and came back up.
And beyond the warning on the pool and the testimony by Carnley and Corcoran, we also have this Q&A from the Frequently Asked Questions section of the pool's website.
Question: is it safe to lean over, lie down, or sit on top of the pool's inflatable top ring? Answer: no. Do not allow any pool occupants, even small children, to lean over, lie down, or sit on the inflatable top ring. This will cause instability in the pool wall and cause the water to flood over the side of the pool.
So yeah, if Adriana leaned over, the top of the pool certainly could have caved and she would have fallen in.
This takes us to our second thought. What would have happened to the pool if Amanda leaned over it due to the bulge, extended her left arm, and pushed down with enough force to drown Adriana and, under the state's theory, cause bruising on her face? As noted during direct, Alan Carnley testified to doing a demonstration where he leaned over the pool like Amanda would have needed to do, with Alan just leaning on the pool without exerting much pressure. Prosecutor Larry Basford followed up on this demonstration during re-cross examination, although he likely wished he had not.
Hey, I just thought of something. On these bone grafts, sir, there may be one in here in this exhibit. When you were leaning over and the water was coming out,
Yeah, if you lean over and you weigh 100 what?
155.
And if you lean over, that water would come out. Would you tell those folks over there what happens when you come off of that ring there? What happens?
He's going to stand back up. But the incident he's talking about is after I had done mashed it down and walked around to where he was at, the side actually collapsed after I walked away.
Well, let me see if I understand this right.
Okay.
You lean over on that ring and the water comes out, and then you come back up, the water stops coming out, right, sir?
That's correct. Okay. Young Les, like I said, when he was there that day and I leaned into it and he told me to get off of it, as soon as I walked away, that's when it collapsed and came out.
And all that water ran out down about 8-10 inches.
Until I walked to the side and pushed the top back up, sir. That's correct.
Now, Alan testified that he was roughly the same height and weight as Amanda. And during this experiment, just leaning over the pool and not exerting much pressure, water gushed out while he was leaning on it, and the pool wall collapsed when he walked away. So if Amanda not only leaned over the pool, but exerted enough downward force to dunk Adriana, how did the pool not totally collapse while she was doing this, or after the fact? Also, at this point, you might be asking a critical question. Was Amanda's shirt sopping wet when the EMTs arrived mere minutes after the drowning? Because if she leaned over the pool and dunked Adriana, the top of the pool would be caving and water would be pouring out. But no, Amanda's shirt was not sopping wet. It was barely wet at all, which is consistent with her story that it only got a little wet when she pulled Adriana from the pool. Because, of course, to do this, Amanda would be pulling up and back to get Adriana out rather than down and forward. This takes us back to the kinesiology experts on one last point. What would be the effect of Amanda having to lean forward to drown her daughter based on the pool bulging out at the bottom? Again, here's Dr. LaDelfa.
So what we find, we ran a couple scenarios where if the body is inclined forward or the torso is flexed forward, how does that affect the strength? And what happens in that case is the overall strength is much lower. So instead of, 26 pounds close to the body, it moves down to about 13 pounds. So it's almost about half the strength you can exert.
But in this situation, there are some variables, with the major one coming into play with the pool in question.
So, yeah, that's pretty much what happens there. Though that scenario is quite complicated because it depends sort of on You know, are you able to kind of balance your body with your other hand? Or are you leaning or bracing in some way against the pull? So that one, you kind of have to do a little more of a deep dive in terms of the other forces involved.
Got it.
So let's do that deep dive, figuratively and literally. As we noted, this was an inflatable, soft-sided pool that would collapse if you even put a little pressure on it from the outside. So if Amanda were dunking Adriana with her left hand, she couldn't have braced herself on the pool. This is basically a worst-case scenario for trying to generate force from this awkward position. So where does this all leave us? If Amanda were drowning her daughter with her left hand, the amount of downward force she would exert would have been drastically diminished due to the following factors. 1. Using her non-dominant hand. 2. Extending her arm to the limit of her reach or likely beyond. 3. Leaning her body forward rather than reaching from a solid base. And 4. Having nothing to brace herself against. And then, on the other side, while exerting sufficient force to leave bad bruises on Adriana's face, Amanda simultaneously would have needed to avoid exerting too much force on the pool to prevent it from partially or fully collapsing and drenching her with water. Looking at both sides of the equation, it seems impossible that this could have been done. But, for the sake of argument, let's say that the needle was threaded and Amanda could have caused Adriana's bruises while not collapsing the pool and soaking herself with water. If that were true, would her fingers produce the bruise pattern that was seen on Adriana's face? As you'll recall from Lisa Ruckman's testimony, she lined some of her fingers up with the dense, linear, vertical bruises on Adriana's forehead. If these were bruises caused by Amanda's fingers from her left hand grabbing Adriana's forehead and dunking her underwater, would we expect these types of linear bruises? The answer is no. For example, here's an excerpt from the article, Physical Abuse, Specifics of Clinical Diagnosis, by Dr. Barton D. Schmidt.
The human hand can leave various types of pressure bruises. The most common types are grab marks or squeeze marks, oval-shaped bruises that resemble fingertips. Grab marks usually are due to being held during violent shaking. The most common site is the upper arm or shoulder. Grab marks of the lower extremities are also common until the child learns to walk. Grab mark bruises can occur on the cheeks if an adult squeezes a child's face in an attempt to get food or medicine into his mouth.
This excerpt is consistent with what other experts say and have testified to at trial, that grab marks tend to be oval or circular based upon the force being focused in the fingertips. For example, in one case in California, an anatomic and clinical pathologist testified that he saw oval-shaped bruises to the victim's eyelids that were consistent with grip marks. And a manual on injury documentation for sexual assault nurse examiners tells them to identify finger pad marks as, quote, bruises caused by pressure of the finger pad or tip during grabbing, holding, pressing, or squeezing.
After coming across a pathologist who had testified on this very issue in a number of cases, I reached out with a photo of Adriana's bruises. They responded, quote, off the record, those do not look like grip marks to me. For me, this was major. Someone I see as a leading expert on this issue specifically saying the bruises on Adriana's face do not look like grip marks. Now, that's not to say that a human hand can't leave linear marks. Both Dr. Schmidt's article and the manual on injury documentation note how slaps can leave linear marks from the fingers. And Dr. Schmidt's article discusses the possibility of linear grip marks if you can wrap your entire hand around something like a wrist, or if you push someone's shoulder against a hard wall. In this case, pressure from the full finger could cause linear bruising to the body part in question. But none of that's the case here. The bruising was on Adriana's face, not a wrist. And if Amanda were drowning Adriana, she'd be pushing her down against the water, with no hard surface providing resistance in the back of the head. Her force would have been focused in her fingertips, not spread across her full fingers. In addition to reaching out to the pathologist, I reached out to another physician who's an expert in child abuse. When shown the photo of Adriana's bruising, the doctor responded off the record as follows.
Though the distribution of these bruises may conform to fingers, their density seems unusual to me for grip marks. I suspect that when the scalp was reflected, the bruises proceeded into the muscular layers below. As such, that would be a lot of grip strength, or a lot of pressure with the head restrained from moving away, sinking into the pool, or an impact.
All this makes a lot of sense. Although air provides a little less resistance than water, go ahead and try it for yourself. Let's say you have something spherical and roughly the size of a 7-year-old girl's face, like a cantaloupe. If you have your hand on top of it, extend your arm, and try to squeeze it, it's likely the pressure is focused on your fingertips. And if you try to squeeze it with the pressure equalized across your full finger, you're likely not generating much force. Now, if you push the cantaloupe against a wall or the ground, it would be a different matter. But if you pushed it down against air or water, your force would be focused in the fingertips. All of which goes to say that Adriana's facial bruises are not consistent with being grabbed by a hand. Even if such a hand grab were to produce linear bruising, it wouldn't look like the bruises on Adriana's head. More likely, the bruises would have been ovals, not lines, based upon the force being focused in the fingertips. And given the bulge in the soft-sided pool, and Amanda's need to lean and extend her arm to do the drowning, it's highly unlikely she could have exerted enough force to cause the bruises in the first place. Finally, it's unlikely Amanda would have used her non-dominant left hand to do the drowning in the first place, with the conflict between AJ's reenactment and drawing creating more questions than answers. In the end, it appears that there are twin failures in this case. First, the state basing its theory of the case on a misguided experiment by someone with no medical training or even a college degree. And second, the judge allowing her to testify to this theory at trial, allowing it to become the linchpin that tied the state's case together. Now, in retrospect, it's clear that like the Von Erich's Iron Claw, or the White Hand of Saruman in Lord of the Rings, this theory fits better in the field of fantasy rather than reality. But if Amanda's hand didn't cause the bruising on Adriana's face, what did? The state went to great lengths at trial to try to claim that none of the people who tried to save her life could have caused the bruising. But there was something critical that they told neither the jury nor their own expert. Next time on Undisclosed.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.
Coda salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of Coda's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use Coda Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on Coda. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, it's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. As you know, we did something new a few months ago by utilizing SpeakPipe as a way for you guys to leave us voice notes. For anyone new here, you can go to speakpipe.com/undisclosed to leave us your questions or thoughts and comments. Since the response to SpeakPipe has been so amazing, we've got two additional exciting announcements to make. First, we have a new Facebook community group where you can engage with us and one another about all things true crime and criminal justice. Just go to facebook.com/groups/toward justice and answer 3 simple questions and you're in. In addition to that, we also just relaunched our Patreon page at patreon.com/undisclosedpod. So many folks have already signed up, and we can't express our gratitude enough to each and every single one of you. Even a dollar goes a long way and allows us to do the work pro bono for our defendants. Also, I would like to give a quick shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production, as well as Patrick Cortez and Ramiro Marquez for our theme music. To engage with us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. You can find us on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're new or a returning listener, you can check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our revamped website at undisclosedpod.com.
If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can follow Rabia at Rabia Squared 2, the number 2, on Instagram, and Colin at Evidence Prof on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for your continued support for us and for supporting our sponsors. Until next time.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of Coda's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use Coda Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on Coda. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.